if you get called, well, I can edit or not because I'll forget.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we're once again joined by our good friend Myron Miller. We talk with Byron about Pope Francis, the Catholic Church, and whether or not he's as liberal as we think.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick, joined as always by my co-host, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Nick Glover.
That's a mean.
We are punchy. We are located in the beautiful Broomhilda Studios here upstairs at Broomhilda at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival with our good friend Byron Miller. Here he is, Byron.
Hello.
Yay,
you might remember Byron from a show he was on last year.
Also recorded in these luxurious Upper Broomhilda Studios.
Yeah. I enjoy the Renaissance Festival season. We get to record in all sorts of different studio environments. Yes.
Soon you'll hear a cannon, and then you'll hear people, and it will be amazing.
It's like a slice of life right here on Geeks Without God. So we are here today to talk to Byron about Pope Francis. I don't know when this episode is going to go up, but right now, as we're recording this episode, our good friend, the friend of all atheists, Pope Francis, is here in America. And the Catholics are showering him with love. And honestly, a lot of atheists are showering him with...
Lutherans or whatever it is.
He is decidedly the least awful pope we have had in memory.
But it's kind of like saying, like my new boyfriend beats me less than my old boyfriend.
Yes, almost not at all.
He just calls me lots of really horrible names.
Yes.
And to be fair, the good old Pope Francis has said that we atheists can get into heaven. So
as long as we accept Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I believe he said that we are capable of being moral, too, which is
The whole thing is he's saying that, which is funny because it directly contradicts the Bible, saying that it is now a forgivable sin because atheism is the only unforgivable sin. So now all of a sudden this is a forgivable sin, which makes it sound like they are really desperate to get people to come to the church.
Yeah.
Well, but they have a long and proud history of ignoring what it actually says in the Bible.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
What?
All churches seem to have that history in common. It just depends on which parts of the Bible they ignore.
You kind of have to. There's really no way around it.
Yeah. It's if you were to follow everything, you'd be dead in days.
Yes.
One of the things I know I've seen in the news like a number of times is, you know, Nancy Pelosi and John Boehner and, you know, Matthew McConnell and Mitch McConnell, all the different politicians that are saying like, oh, I'd love to have lunch with you, and Pope says no, I'm having lunch with the homeless.
And everyone's like, oh, so brave.
Because, you know, homeless people are scary.
But it's like, we'll say the new pope being a Jesuit does have a profound focus on poverty.
Yeah.
And not in the Mother Teresa way where, like, poverty is holy, but in a way that poverty is an affliction that we can work on and solve. Like, I agree.
Yeah, so before we vilify him too much, we have to acknowledge that initiative, which is his primary initiative, is good no matter what religion or non-religion you are.
Absolutely true.
I would also like to point out, though, however, that as much as he wants to help the poor and fix wealth disparity, he isn't selling anything from the Vatican. And he still sits on a chair made of gold.
Well, he actually does not.
He does not.
Yeah.
Sit on
the chair exists.
He hasn't gotten rid of it.
I'm sure the church wouldn't let him because
wouldn't let him.
I believe he lives in a humble apartment and drives a used car.
That's fine.
Like that.
I just wish that they. It's hard for me to look at the vast wealth, stores of money and gold that are in the Vatican and have someone say, "We should really do something about this, you guys. What could we possibly do?"
I think there's a separation a bit between like the Pope and the Church.
I know.
And even though he is God's mouthpiece and supposedly has the fucking red hotline Batman Commissioner Gordon phone to God, he has been contradicted by the church.
Yeah.
There's been things he said, and the church has come out later and said,
well, what do you mean? I suspect being head of the church is very much like being head of the U.S. government.
Yes.
You know, you get to say an awful lot of things and then got shot down by your, you know, your underlings.
Sure. I can see that.
Because you're going to die soon or get unelected soon, you know.
Yeah, because the popes, they go for old dudes.
They do.
Pretty much exclusively.
He actually said something really funny about that. He was talking about how he's driving around in a Fiat right now instead of a giant armored Pope mobile.
Yeah.
And he said that, you know, things can happen, referring to the last assassination attempt. Not on him.
Right.
And he said, but at my age, I'm not risking that much.
That's great.
That was very cute. He's
a very charismatic guy.
Yep. He is a very charismatic guy.
It's
and he's smart. I mean, yeah. That's the thing is he's a smart and clever guy. He's got a master's in chemistry, I think, or biology. Like, 'cause yeah. I know there's that quote from Santorum saying the Pope should leave climate change science to the scientists.
Yes.
And it's like, dude has a degree in science. Like, he literally is one of those people that
very
you're
much
saying.
Unlike Rick Santorum
does not actually right. have
no, I don't know if Rick Santorum so has totally a degree
I'm sure.
in something.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
Well, and it really does bug
MBA,
me.
No doubt.
You know,
yeah, you're right, yeah.
To get off of the Pope for a second, what bugs me, and my mom is a Catholic, and I love my mom very much, and she always talks about how she wants to change the church from within, you know, the idea of allowing female priests and allowing priests to marry and being more
becoming Episcopalian,
be openly gay,
being more open and accepting to homosexuals and all that stuff. She's like, want to change the church from within. And I'm like, okay, well, that's fine, but you still have this papal structure that you're never you're never going to get away from.
Yeah.
And Catholics listen to the Pope or don't listen to the Pope based on whether or not they like what he says.
Yeah.
So Rick Santorum, who says he's a Catholic.
A staunch Catholic.
Thought,
yeah.
You know, right. Pope Benedict was the bee's knees. He loved Pope Benedict. Francis
yeah.
comes in, who's let's be fair, not left, just left of
ish.
Benedict.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? All right.
Who was, literally a Nazi.
but he's left. He's just enough left of Santorum that now Santorum stands up and says, well, this stupid Pope accepting climate change science. It's like, you're a fucking Catholic.
Right.
You're supposed to be like, if the Pope comes up and says climate change is real, well, God told him climate change is real. And you better shut the fuck up and believe him and start fighting against climate change. Because he's... By the way, you know, we talk about him having the red phone to God. Do you think at this point maybe it's a smartphone? I mean, do you think God's upgraded?
Is he texting God?
I would hope.
God's like, well, climate change... Byron, you travel a lot for Renfests, right? And
I do.
Like, do you run in? I mean, are there a lot of Catholics on the circuit? I
have no idea.
Yeah,
to be honest,
it strikes me as something where there's lots of kind of born again or lots of pagans, but not necessarily.
I generally tend to assume that everyone else believes like I do, unless they tell me differently.
Sure. No, that makes
which
sense.
Which I think most people do. I'm probably wrong more often than most people, but that is my general assumption. I do have a funny story about the Vatican, now that you bring it up, the Vatican and the Church in general, but specifically the Vatican itself. Many years ago, actually about 10 years ago, my wife and I went on a European honeymoon tour, and one of the places we went is Rome, and we went to the Vatican. I wasn't 100% sold on going to the Vatican, being a lifelong atheist. And I also realized, as we're going through the Vatican Museum tour, that that being an archaeologist at some point also makes me automatically predisposed to dislike the Vatican Church. As we're walking through the museum, and at one point we turn a corner, and there's this giant arched hallway, and it's probably 20 feet tall, and it's semicircular, and lining the whole thing are busts, Roman busts. And I'm probably looking at 1,000 Roman busts.
Yep, I know. I've been there, and I know
I am
all
looking
you're talking
at
about.
The rape of history.
Yeah.
All of those things have lost half of their meaning, being out of context.
Right.
And the whole Vatican is like that. But paintings, unless they were done for the Vatican, of which there are many.
Sure.
There is much art that was commissioned by the Vatican and is wonderful. So they one point there, around the corner, art ripped from across the Mediterranean, minus 100,000 points there. Ugh. You know, it was horrible. We had also waited in line for like a mile and a half to get into the Vatican Museum. It was free Thursday. How about that?
Oh, boy.
At which point, it turns out, all of Rome goes to the Vatican Museum on free Thursday.
I think all of Europe, because, you know, they've got the trains and they can get there.
Wait, it's not
quick.
Always free?
No,
oh
it is not.
Oh, my God. That's so shocking to me, actually.
So I'm a little fussy already. But we managed to get through the Vatican Museum, going through the progressively smaller rooms. The papal apartments, by the way, are tiny. They're like closets.
Oh, I'm sure.
Anyway, we go through that, and we've made it through, and I'm a little bit fuming inside about the Catholic Church in general and stealing things and all that stuff. And so now we're in Vatican Square, and we should go see St. Peter's, right? Because we're there.
Yeah.
And we get around the corner, and there's the line to get into St. Peter's.
Yeah.
And it's like 100,000 people long. Oh. And I believe I screamed in the middle of St. Peter's, "Oh, fuck no." And my one-time Catholic wife, like all the blood drains out of her face. She says, "Oh, he didn't mean, sorry, he did not mean." And it turns out the line really wasn't all that bad. And we went inside St. Peter's, and it was amazing and, again, infuriating.
Yeah. St. Peter's is an amazing building.
It's an astonishing structure. It
so
really
full of money. And you just think about what that money could have done.
You're like, I'm looking at the Protestant Revolution. I see why it happened here in front of me.
Yeah.
I want to nail a proclamation to a door.
One of my favorite things in St. Peter, I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast before, and I don't know if you saw it, but there is this one annex. And you go, and on the wall, it's this tablet, and it has every single pope that there has ever been. And the thing that I thought was great about this tablet is, it's finite; they can run out. At some point, there can be no more popes because this tablet will be full.
So at some point, I mean, looking at all the, I guess you could say, like, stolen or appropriated artifacts.
Stolen.
That are there. Well, no, see, appropriated also because now it's a part of the Catholic Church's history that they're there. They're now historical within a new context than their original context.
And
so changing, destroying, altering, or selling those things from Vatican City, from the Vatican, is destroying a different part of history.
And you can't get them back their original historical context.
No,
you cannot put them
gone.
Back in the Roman villa that they came from and get that back. It just doesn't work that way.
Right.
Those things are sacked and burned long ago.
And that actually brings up what I was just about to say. Another point to the church, many of those are in fact rescued. They would have been gone if they were not
absolutely.
In the Vatican.
Absolutely. So, how many things were saved and preserved through the Dark Ages because of the church.
More than none.
And if they're Roman...
More than none. A non-zero.
And the Roman busts at least didn't go too far from home.
It's true.
Another thing that's interesting in Rome, my wife and I don't know if you did this, Byron, my wife and I went through a lot. There are tons of churches. Every block, there's like two churches, and they're all old as fuck.
Are they all Catholic?
All pretty
much. I wasn't sure. You never know.
I didn't see any that were.
If there are any that aren't Catholic, they aren't advertising.
They don't say so.
Like, do they have are there any like orthodoxies from all Roman Catholic?
They're all built by popes.
That's what Istanbul is for.
Every pope had to build their own church in the city.
The
thing that's really interesting, you walk into these churches and like the columns that are in these churches holding up these churches, they got from old Roman temples.
Yes.
They didn't build their own columns.
Why would you? They're laying all over the place.
There's so much cultural appropriation of old artifacts all over Rome. It's really kind of fascinating the way they would just go, "Oh, well, this temple's fallen down, but these columns, they look like they're in pretty good shape."
Yeah.
My favorite though is this temple that's in the Forum, and there's this series of columns, and on the columns there are these huge marks that around the column. And what you find out is they're chain marks because after the church took over Rome, and they were trying to appropriate these columns for other things. They wanted to take down the columns from this one temple, so they got like a bunch of horses and they attached chains to the horses to pull the columns down,
God.
And they couldn't do it. They could not get the columns to come down.
They didn't have the horsepower.
They did not have the horsepower. So there are these marks where the horses were trying to tear down the columns, but they never were able to do it. I enjoyed that.
So back to the Pope. Before we started recording, Byron, you were talking about moving the goalpost.
Yeah.
Do you want to expand on that a little bit with the new Pope and the church?
Yeah, that, you know, and that really, this really is in danger of diving into politics, which is almost unavoidable. That this Pope really seems very, very liberal, but only in context, only in modern context, that he is considerably more liberal than, say, the previous Pope or the modern American Republican right. Mm-hmm. Because they think that'll sell seats.
And you it know, does, it, to some degree. It I mean, sells it has. Few. It has. I think it's going to start selling fewer seats, but yeah. Yes.
Do you think it's strictly a grab for people's attention and attendance and therefore money? Or do you think that maybe there is some altruism?
On the part of the current Pope?
Both the Pope and the Church.
Yeah.
Like,
the Pope seems utterly sincere to me. Mm-hmm. If he's not utterly sincere, he's an exceptionally good actor, which I don't anticipate.
It doesn't seem like a thing Popes can do.
Yeah. Seems unlikely, doesn't it? Yeah. You can't say for certain, but it seems unlikely. I think he is genuinely altruistic and sincere Jesuit and all that, which says really admirable things about his character. There was that wonderful Stephen Colbert quote from a few years ago about how, what was that about Jesus and the poor? That we need to admit that either.
Either we're helping the poor because of Jesus, like because we believe in Jesus' message, or we don't, and like fuck
because
the poor,
we just don't want to.
Admit we're not a Christian nation.
Yeah.
Colbert often has a.
He's a Catholic.
He is a Catholic.
He is,
and he's very, very strongly believes in it, and also is very committed to. He is more of a liberal. I mean, that's what's so funny about the Colbert Report from before.
Very much like Jesus.
I
always find it interesting if you look in context of what Jesus said, you know, whether or not Jesus existed, whether or not he said these things, what he says and what he does in terms of advancing the rights of women in the era that he's in, as far as accepting those who are on the outcast of society, in the context of the time that he was, and how what happens with religion, and one of the problems that I have with religion is they're always tied to a leader, and they're always tied to the time in which that leader lived, and never look at the broader context of, well, Jesus was quite the liberal for the time. Mm-hmm. And if Jesus was around now, what would Jesus say about same-sex marriage? He'd say different things.
Would he be camping out in the Occupy crowd, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of where he was.
I had a conversation with Tony about this, Tony Miller, about this, because I get frustrated when people say that everything Jesus ever said was kind, and he never had a cruel word for anyone, because it's not true. Because if you read in Revelations, the part where they go to visit the town that Jezebel's in, and so he had kind words for the women, especially who are on the outcasts, as long as they also believed in God.
Yeah.
And so when they are what he considers wicked, and like he literally says that he will kill Jezebel and her children. To like put her children to death to teach her the lesson of her wanton ways, because you are housing this woman in your city, and I will tear down your city like if you don't upcast her out. And it's like, oh, so I mean, just and it's like, well, sure, that's Revelation. It's like, okay, but it says Jesus said this thing. So like, as much as you want to be like, yes, he was so great and everything he said was fine, so it's okay, Christianity's great, to some degree, no, because there's always a loophole that they can find as their reason for hating.
And I don't agree that everything Jesus said was
fine. Oh, I know. A lot of people say that. A lot of atheists.
Because what's amazing, what I find is the mental gymnastics when you've got the evangelicals who absolutely hate
homosexuals. They say they don't. They say they love them, but they really do hate them.
They say they hate the sin, not the sinner, but they hate
really,
both.
They hate
them. The sin creeps them out, so they hate the sinner.
Yeah, they hate homosexuals, and, you know, if you go to them with Leviticus, they'll pull out, like, this one verse from the New Testament,
so
which really has nothing to do with same-sex marriage.
No.
Nothing to do with homosexuality at all, but they use that as their, well, no, Jesus said something about same-sex marriage, and here it is, and we're gonna find a way to kind of alter it,
shoehorn it in there
enough that it can justify our hating homosexuals. And back to the Pope, I mean, he's saying decent things when it comes to homosexuals. He's saying more accepting things
but
than
they
any.
They shouldn't be allowed to be married.
Yeah, but he is at least saying they're automatically going to hell.
He's being not particularly hateful. So that's
right. But trans people
are ruining. They're demon destroying. Infected. Yeah, they're demons. Yeah, they're demons. They're destroying whatever.
Obviously, like, a step too far for him.
Yep. Well, and that's and that's, it's frustrating because it's like to be like, I don't know, it's frustrating to be told, well, we should accept the little bit of movement that we're getting. Yes, of course we should. But at the same time, we also should still be fighting for the rights of the people who are still being marginalized, despite this good forward moving.
You can applaud the progress without ignoring how far they have left to go.
Agreed.
Speaking of things changing within the church and tying back into Rome, Rome is covered in historical plaques. On this spot, this person did this thing. On this spot, this. You can't walk 5 feet without tripping over them. And one that I happened to notice, and it stuck with me, was that it was a cornerstone and a bronze plaque, and on this spot, at this date, not very long ago, 18-something, mm-hmm. Pope yada yada the umpteenth, declared the doctrine of the virgin birth.
Oh.
Less than 200 years ago.
It's important to remember how much of this stuff is modern.
Yeah.
The papal infallibility is not, it hasn't been around for that long. It was also in the 1800s that there was a pope who basically, as a power grab, pushed the cardinals to declare papal infallibility. Before that, the pope was not considered infallible in matters
of
faith.
He was much more ahead of state than anything else for the last, you know, 1,000 years before that.
1300s, I mean, there was literally a time of two popes because it was a political schism.
Oh, yeah.
It was more politically convenient for one country, one group to have their pope and in defiance of the other pope because they didn't like what that pope said. So they made their own
pope.
Let's
not listen to that pope. Let's listen to our pope.
Yeah, that pope's not the real pope.
Which all really goes back to why we have a separation of church and state in this country, because our founding fathers saw 1,000 years of that, and it's a mess.
Yeah.
It's always a mess.
It's true. Yeah. It really is.
It's a really good... If there's a doctrine I agree with, it's the separation of church and state.
Right?
I think that's a great doctrine.
They're kind of incompatible.
They really
are. It should be incompatible, is the thing. Yep. If you really believe, if you shouldn't, as a person of faith and religion, you shouldn't want there to be church and state together, because you never know when your faith is going to be the one that falls out of favor.
That's something that's very easy for people who aren't getting their way and want it to forget, is that the separation of church and state protects the church as much as it does anything else.
Yeah.
I on the Pioneer Press, the local newspaper, had a Facebook comment about presidential candidate Ben Carson saying that, you know, he wouldn't be comfortable with a Muslim ever being president. Muslims shouldn't be president because their faith is in direct opposition to blah 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 American values, blah blah blah, whatever.
Well, he's been great news fodder lately.
Oh, I know. And so this Minnesota Muslim boy basically responded, and that was what the article was about. And I got drawn into the comments because stupid Jeremy Stomberg commented on it, so it popped up in my feed. So I go over to the comments, and these people are like, yeah, because these Muslims will make Sharia law, and that's all they want. They just want to get their religious laws in our laws.
Yep.
And I commented was, how many of you who are complaining about this, you know, Sharia law scare, are planning to vote for one of the many Republican candidates who want to put their Christian values and change the Constitution and our laws to better reflect what they consider to be their values? I'm like, beware of hypocrisy. There is no difference. Religious law is religious law.
And many of them really think that it's okay because it's their religion.
Right. Right. And that's what's so
don't
frustrating.
Say the
and that's
they don't
the, see the, it's the same
difference.
Thing in Arab countries there where they have Sharia law. They feel the same thing. They feel that this law is right because of
these are our beliefs. So
yeah.
It should
these
be law.
Of course
so
they should it should be law. Law. And, yeah. Of course girls shouldn't be able to show their shoulders in public
women
school.
Women shouldn't be able to drive in Saudi Arabia. Clearly that's what
mine was an American rule. rule, by the way. Mine was an American rule, just FYI. That's recently they've been making middle school girls cover, they can't wear tank tops because their bare shoulders are too enticing to boys.
Too distracting.
Yep. Yeah.
And that clearly, you know, those kind of rules are not, have no basis in anything but religion. Religion is what, even if there's no mention of religion when you come up with those policies, it's clearly driven by religious belief and a religious aversion
and a fear of
to sex.
There is no secular argument against gay marriage.
Right.
You just can't make
one. I have yet to hear one that is
unless
not
it's a straw man, a straw man about take. How no one should have
the only secular argument I've heard against gay marriage is essentially a secular argument against marriage as a state institution.
That's a valid argument you can make. Yeah, but that's not what
it's a different
that's
argument.
Not what we're talking about.
But then you're not arguing against same-sex marriage. You're arguing against marriage.
Yep.
And it's like whatever the rules are around marriage, it should be equal whether it's same-sex or differing sex.
Exactly.
So, all right, I think we better get to five questions.
Yeah, we should. People are filing in.
They're already drinking. People are trying to sell popovers out there. I'm sure people are going to want to buy brooms really
soon. I should probably sell a broom or something.
Yeah.
All right, so we have five new questions since last year, Byron, and we're going to start with Nick. What's question number one?
What's a movie that you'll stop and watch anytime it's on?
Let's see. I would probably stop, go back to the original Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, Episode 4?
Yeah.
That's Nick's answer, too. Yeah.
Yep. Episode 4.
I have trouble getting anything else done when they're on. And really, the first trilogy.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'll keep peering over my monitor working. Oh, wait, yeah.
What's going on? Oh, this scene. I'll just stop for a minute.
This is a good scene.
Oh, they're in the asteroid. I want to watch this.
Question 2. What's your geekiest or most prized possession?
I just bought the remote control Millennium Falcon.
That's awesome.
I happened to already be in the market for a quadcopter, and I was I'm gonna get one of those any day now. When that was launched, and that sealed the deal.
Oh, that's awesome!
A slam dunk.
That's awesome.
It is fun.
Pretty amazing.
I've decided to save the Sphero for Christmas.
That's going on my Christmas.
But that is also a will buy.
I sent someone at the office.
Oh, the day one, Force Friday, because we had the Star Wars license at FFG. So nice. Force Friday, someone had one, and it was just cruising around the office, and every now and then you'd hear a little. Yeah. Like, oh, hello. And it's like, goodbye, there it goes. It works like a Roomba. It bumps into things and then it learns, and it's very cute.
Yeah.
Makes it look very clumsy.
All right. Question number 3. What a fictional deity or creature or being do you wish was real?
I want to see a dragon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A dragon.
Yeah.
Dragon's a good one.
A dragon would be a really good thing to be real.
If I could pick one mythological being, I want to have a big fireproof zoo full of dragons.
Like an Asian dragon or a European dragon?
Yeah, I don't care. I'm not picky.
All right. Fair. Any kind of dragon.
Question number 4 is, so say religion is gone. What is the biggest problem humanity faces?
I keep shooting myself down.
No, not that.
Altruism? No.
No.
No. Atheists are just perfectly good altruists. I don't know. I can't think of anything that if bypassing the turmoil of the act of religion going away.
Right.
If it were gone, it had never existed, I can't think of a downside.
That's a good answer.
That's a good answer. The first time we've had that.
That's great.
So Rachel. Good for you.
Question 5 is, what's your favorite quote?
Oh, there's a, it's one from, it was Asimov. He said, Eureka isn't how scientific breakthroughs happen. It's, they always start with, well, that's odd.
I like that.
That's a very good quote.
Yeah, I like that.
That's great. Byron, thank you so much for
my pleasure.
Joining us. I'm sure maybe around this time next year we'll end up back upstairs at Broomhilda. Please, if you are listening to this episode, I'm going to try. I think I'll put it up this Tuesday just so you have a chance to come out to the Renaissance Festival.
Yeah.
And you have a chance to buy a broom or a wand.
Yeah.
Or some
Where
other.
Where are you going after this?
North Carolina.
So if you're listening in North Carolina or you're on a trip, you can go
keep
there.
Keep an eye out for Broomhilda. Byron does fantastic work. We certainly want you to know that. If you have any thoughts about the new Pope or the Catholic Church or churches in Rome, anything like that, feel free to let us know. Comment on our website. And, of course, the new five questions. You can send those answers to
Even
five.
Even if you already answered our old ones, by the way.
Yeah, somebody sent us an email this week. They're like, if I answered the old ones, can I answer the new ones? The answer is yeah.
Yes.
Five questions. Five questions at Geeks Without God. Just send them on in. Thanks so much for listening. We're going to go out and entertain people at the Renaissance Festival.
Shut up. The magic is happening.
Right now. Bye.
Bye.
It's a me, Pope Francis.
We're geeks without God. Moral authority, we don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome in my broom closet anytime.